Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel, joined today by Matt Eddy, an unusual podcast for us here at Baseball America, as we're going to break it down Major League style. The regular season finally over after the Game 163. 2 years in a row, we've had a Game 163. This one for the American League Central Division Championship. White Sox won, Twins nothing. Fantastic game. Bittersweet for those of us who are Nick Blackburn fans, but great season for the Twins. A great ending to the regular season, Matt, as far as drama. The Twins not getting in, the White Sox beating three different teams on 3 days in a row to get into the postseason. So we obviously have White Sox versus Rays and Red Sox versus Angels in the American League. The only real, again, the one that came down to the wire was in the Central. And in the National League, we have the Phillies winning the National League East, back-to-back playoff years for the Phillies. Then the National League Central producing the wild card with the Cubs winning the division with the best record in the NL. Brewers winning the wild card on a last day triumph by CeCe Sabathia. The Dodgers edging out the Diamondbacks in the West. And really the big shock, I think, as we go to the playoffs is that both New York teams, Matt, don't make it. And then the Diamondbacks, a team that took a huge step forward with a lot of young players last year, kind of takes a step back this year, even after trading down the stretch for Adam Dunn. If there were three teams that, like, the Twins not making is no big shock. The two New York teams and the Diamondbacks not making, I think most people thought those teams were going to get in.
Yeah, maybe the Mets and Yankees exclusion is maybe some karma coming back to get them for the for the stadium bill that the city is footing.
I hadn't even thought about that. Great point.
But,
great take.
But yeah, you know, the Mets falling apart and going 1-2 in the final weekend and scoring five runs in the process really, you know, let some other teams in the league off the hook, like the Diamondbacks, you know, a team which until Manny Ramirez came to town was the class of the NL West.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And then and the Brewers. I mean, the Brewers were having a September collapse for the ages. And then a very bold move, I think, to fire Ned Yost, go with Dale Sveim, and then and it worked out for them. I think the main thing is that they got some big hits from Prince Fielder and Ryan Braun. And obviously CeCe Sabathia was huge. Giovanni Gallardo even comes back and from his knee injury and makes a start. In the season's final week, and then he'll start game one of their playoff series. Seth McClung had a four-inning scoreless outing. I mean, they were just good enough, just barely better than the Mets. Back-to-back years with these late fades for the Mets. Last year, I think, was really a collapse. This year, they just weren't good enough, I think, especially in the first half with Willie Randolph. So if you want to look at it as a glass half-full Mets fan, I think you would just blame it all on Willie. I don't know what the Yankees' excuse is, but $200 million, no playoff series, barely finishing in third place, really. And I think having to watch Johan Santana have the kind of year he had with the Mets, I still think if you're the Yankees, you have some serious non-buyer's remorse over you know, not making that trade, not pulling the trigger for Santana when the Mets did. You agree?
Yeah, and Santana, you know, pitching on one knee, as it turns out. He had arthroscopic knee surgery
already
today.
Huh?
Yeah,
how
so
about that? I missed that.
He pitched that complete game on one knee.
Well, it's the 3 days rest week in baseball. It was awesome to see John Danks last night do it. It was awesome to see Santana do it. Great to see CeCe Sabathia keep on doing it. Speaking of Sabathia, let's go and talk National League playoffs, Matt. We're going to break down all four series here on the Baseball America podcast. So we'll start off with Milwaukee and Philadelphia. Two teams I think are really known for their offense. And this series, I think, I'm going to argue the Brewers' standpoint, but just in general, Matt, this would be a real toss-up series, I think, if Ben Sheets were healthy.
Yes.
But if ifs and buts were candy and nuts. I mean, Sheets is never really healthy. And here, quite the contrast between Sheets and Sabathia going into their free agent seasons. Sabathia logs more than 250 innings after throwing 240-plus last year with the Indians. Second year in a row, he leads the team to the playoffs. And Sheets is a very good pitcher, and I'm a huge Ben Sheets guy, but he just doesn't have it. He's got, a tear in his elbow. It's a muscle tear, he said. Mm-hmm. And he's probably done for the year, and the Brewers' chances without him are much less than they would have been with him.
Sure, definitely. And in the Phillies, you know, it's really more of a pitching-oriented team this year than any Phillies team in that ballpark has been. You know, this is a team that had a better ERA than the Mets, for example, a team that pitches in a spacious ballpark. And you can really see it with Cole Hamels and the resurgent Brett Myers. And, you know, an assist from Jamie Moyer and Joe Blanton, you know, a couple.
Solid guys. But Brett Myers, that's actually a huge point to bring up. I mean, Brett Myers, was awful early. I mean, he was the Jeff Francoeur of pitchers. They sent him down, try to clear his head. But with him, it worked. And that's kind of stunning to me that it worked for Brett Myers. I know this guy was a head case, but I mean, I think he deserves kudos for that. You got a couple of interesting managers, I think, here to look at. I mean, Charlie Manuel is thought of as a buffoon by so many people. I still think he's not the most sophisticated guy in the world, but he's a pretty good manager. He's kind of from the Grady Little school of managers. And the other thing is that whether it's him or whether it's just the pitching coach and him working together, I think you have to give him credit for the way the Phillies bullpen has been so consistent all year. It seems like that's where you start in their biggest advantage in this series. Their bullpen, best in the National League, but a lot better than Milwaukee's.
That's a great point. I focused on the starting pitching, but it was probably the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning relief help they got all year that pushed them past the other National League competitors.
Well, I think when you're comparing them to Milwaukee also, though, their starting pitching is a lot better than Milwaukee's, too. Pitching, both halves of it, I think. Their bullpen and their rotation are better.
Yeah, in particular, obviously, Brad Lidge, who, as far as we know, is the second pitcher to go a season without blowing a save, the first being Eric Gagne, though that could be incorrect.
Yeah, that's off the tops of our heads. We haven't looked that one up. But Brad Lidge is, I mean, and we both acknowledge also that he struggled a little bit down the stretch, but they have a great set of men in front of him. They have more than one. They're more than just Brad Lidge, I guess, is a big part of their bullpen. The other key for their bullpen is they can go right, left with you. And that's the one thing I do like that Milwaukee has done with its bullpen. Again, I'm supposed to take their side in this, and I'm struggling with it already. But the Phillies do have some pretty key left-handed bats, obviously, in Utley and Ryan Howard. Ryan Howard had a huge September, but he's clearly vulnerable. I mean, 199 strikeouts is 199 strikeouts. He clearly can be pitched to. Mm-hmm. And with Mitch Stetter and Brian Schaus in the bullpen, plus they've got Manny Parra active for this series. Obviously, you have Sabathia's going to pitch. If you're the Brewers, you hope only one game. You hope you don't have to go five games. But they're going to be able to attack some of those key left-handed bats. Always seems to bring me back to the key for the Phillies is Pat Burrell. And he's ailing a little bit as the season winds down. I wonder, I guess, the other key right-handed bat, it seems like, for the Phillies is Jason Worth.
Definitely.
I've always been a Jason Worth fan. He's toolsier than people always gave him credit for.
Yeah.
I always wonder what would have happened if he'd been left as a catcher. I don't think he produced like this offensively, but he seems like he's athletic enough to have given it a whirl back there despite being 6'5", 6'6". But I think Milwaukee, to win this series, Milwaukee's just going to have to just bludgeon Philadelphia. And even there, Matt, Philadelphia's offense is very capable of winning a slugfest too, don't you think?
Sure. And, when you talk about the left-on-left matchups, the key to that is making sure that the other manager won't immediately pinch hit. You're not going to pinch hit for Ryan Howard or Chase Utley.
Right.
You know, I mean, when Greg Dobbs comes up, for example, you just bring in Pedro Feliz.
Sure.
You know, but that's what the Brewers carrying those two lefty relievers, it could keep them in the games late anyway.
I wouldn't shock me if the Brewers, they kind of almost remind me of like the 1999 Red Sox. I'm a Red Sox fan, so I guess that's who they remind me of. But that Red Sox team, it was just such a If they felt so lucky to be there in the postseason because Pedro had gotten hurt late. I remember he had that heroic, ridiculous no-hit playoff appearance out of the bullpen against the Indians. That team was a really kind of a offense-happy Red Sox team. But then when they got to the LCS against the Yankees, they were just happy to win the one game that Pedro won. I almost feel like the Brewers are going to be just happy to win one game in this series if it's Sabathia. But I also wonder if I'm the Brewers, if you win that first game, if by chance you happen to win that first game, would you push Sabathia back to the game three just to give him some actual rest? Or do you still throw him game two? Do you think to yourself, you can't win unless you have Sabathia win two and five?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be telling. It looks like right now they're almost locked into Sabathia's going game two. He's going to pitch game five. He'll pitch games two, five, and probably seven on 2 days' rest. I mean, he may as well. They're just turning him into a much larger version of Sandy Koufax at this point. And in some ways, I don't blame him, but quite a heroic performance by Sabathia down the stretch. To me, the big Achilles heel for Milwaukee is their bullpen, Matt. They're just not good enough. Lefties are not. Solomon Torres, Eric Gagne, Guillermo Mota. This is like the crash and burn all-stars.
Is David Riske in there?
David Riske is not on their postseason bullpen. They do have Carlos Villanueva and possibly David Bush could pitch in relief as well. And I've always been a David Bush in relief guy, but I just don't see it happening for Milwaukee.
Oh, and you forgot to mention Guillermo Moda too.
Oh yeah, no, him and his magic changeup and his another part for the Brewers. I really do think the Brewers' inexperience is going to work against them.
Let's flip it around. I mean, the Phillies are going to be marching out two left-handed starters, and this is a predominantly right-handed Brewers team. And the strength of the Phillies bullpen, aside from Lidge, is the plethora of left-handed options. But who are you going to use the lefties on? Prince Fielder. That's it.
Right. Yeah, you're going to use on That's Prince it. Fielder. To me, the thing that the key there is that the Phillies do have lefties with changeups. I mean, Jamie Moyer and Cole Hamels, their best pitch for each guy is a changeup, and they're both very effective against right-handed hitters. I think that especially a guy like a Moyer, a crafty veteran like that versus a free-swinging young right-handed lineup like the Brewers, I think that's a toxic mix for the Brew Crew.
And that's not entirely fair to Romero, who's been going inning at a time stretches this year, and he's been pretty effective.
He's pretty doggone good.
So, I shouldn't badmouth old JC.
I don't think I took it the wrong way if I were JC. I would not take it that way. But so we both like the Phillies in this series. I'm picking the Phillies in four. Phillies in four for you?
Phillies in three.
Wow, Phillies in three. The Sabathia. And Sabathia could definitely run out of gas. As he did last year. And as I remember Randy Johnson running out of gas when he came on big time earlier in his career, like with the Mariners on short rest in the playoffs and then again with the Astros. Obviously, he was still up for it with the Diamondbacks, like the fourth or fifth time he did it. In 2001,
we love CeCe, but he's no Iron Man Jack McGinnity.
No, he is not. He's a little bit bigger than Iron Man Jack. He's a little bit bigger than pretty much anyone who's ever played the game, which is he's hard to compare. But I also wanted to mention like a 3.10 ERA in the second half. I looked up for Brett Myers, which is very impressive.
Look at that home run rate. How many did he give up?
This is Cole Hamels now. And then Cole Hamels, he is susceptible to the long ball against right-handed hitters though. Cole Hamels 215, 261, 356. A pronounced reverse split for Cole Hamels. So 616 opponents OPS. Cole Hamels, I think, tailor-made to attack this Brewers lineup. So tough matchup for Milwaukee, but kudos to the Brewers for getting there. And I do think they deserve credit for making a bold move and firing Ned Yost. Even if it didn't work, I think it was the right move because they weren't going to make it the way they were going with Ned Yost, and they had to try to make it. So... the other matchup in the National League, Dodgers and Cubs. Matt, it sounds like in our pre-show prep, we agree that this is probably the best matchup of the four. The two series involving the Los Angeles teams are the best of the four postseason series, I think we think. And you like this. Why do you like this Cubs-Dodgers matchup so much?
Looking at the strength of the Cubs, they just have there's more balance than any NL team. The Dodgers' pitching is great. But aside from Manny Ramirez and Casey Blake has those moments, it's not a terribly imposing offense. It's one that could be pitched to.
They definitely
put it that way.
That's a good way to put it. And the Dodgers, also one of these teams that we've got some of the postseason rosters arrayed about us here. And the Dodgers have some real the biggest wild card, one of the biggest wild cards in the whole postseason to me. Giovanni Gallardo is one we already mentioned, but Rafael Furcal back for the Dodgers at the end of this. I mean, they were playing Nomar at short for part of this year.
And Angel Barroa finished with the most at-bats
as
their shortstop.
Which is just crazy and frankly terrible. Although he played fairly well for the Dodgers. For him, he had a 300 on-base percentage. That's good for Angel Barroa. But this is not, an overly offensive team. Really, outside of Andre Ethier, nobody else other than Manny really was consistent for them. I mean, even James Loney had a disappointing year, I think, it's fair to say. Russ Martin slugged under 400. I think it's fair to say that was a disappointing year for them. They do rest on the pitching. I think when I'm supposed to take the Dodgers' tack for this and support the Dodgers' cause. For me, the biggest thing the Dodgers have going for them is Frank McCourt's favorites, the ex-Red Sox. Their owner is a Bostonian. He loves his ex-Red Sox. And I think Derek Lowe has proven, no matter what kind of regular season he has, and he had one of his best ones this year, but Derek Lowe's a big-game pitcher. Miguel Tejada remembers Derek Lowe giving him that obscene gesture in 2003 in the division series. And Derek Lowe was phenomenal for Boston in back-to-back postseasons in 03 and 04. And he has a lot of big-game experience. He's not going to be phased. He's clearly still at the top of his game. I enjoyed hearing John Smoltz talk about him today on the Mike and Mike show. That was the only pitcher he pulled out for the Dodgers. And I was sitting there thinking why he would have picked out Derek Lowe, and then I realized they're both Michigan natives. But I think it's a Michigander, is what you call
Derek Lowe got the ball for the Dodgers in the first game of the 06 DS, too, I believe. So he's
experienced even as a Doyer. But I like their postseason pitching.
Mm-hmm.
I like their bullpen. They have power arms in their bullpen, obviously with Broxton. Takashi Saito hasn't really been at his best since he's come back from his injury problems. But to me, the Dodgers are going to win this. They're going to win with starting pitching. And they don't have Lima time to lean on for this one.
But they do have Chan Ho Park.
That's unfortunate that they don't have Lima time, and they do have Chan Ho. I would love it if they had Lima time on hand for this event. But for me, Derek Lowe is going to have to win game one for them, and Manny is going to have to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
The other X factor we haven't even mentioned is they do have Joe Torre, and he does have a pretty steady hand, although he's not won a playoff series here in a couple of years either as a manager. It must be pointed out. I think offensively the Dodgers are going to have to get something out of Furcal because they need a spark. They need someone other than Ethier or Manny Ramirez to contribute. I'm sure he's not fully healthy, but Rafael Furcal clearly could provide that spark for them more than, say, Baroa or a Blake DeWitt or Casey Blake or Nomar or even Matt Kemp. I like their chances if Furcal is anywhere close to healthy offensively.
And how about the Dodgers carrying three rookies in the bullpen? They got Corey Wade, James McDonald, and uber prospect Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, and I guess Kershaw's not going to start. They're not going to bring – well, they've got Lowe, and they've got Billingsley, and they've got Hiroki Kuroda. And Greg Maddux also made their playoff roster. He's not going to come out of the bullpen. It would be awesome if he did, but it's not going to happen. Blowing 83. His 83 would play up to 86 out of the bullpen, I think. But so Kershaw, will they use him as a lefty specialist? Is he a long man? Is he just kind of along for the ride? He threw 100 innings in the big leagues. He's thrown a lot of innings this year.
Hmm.
I'm a little surprised that he's along when they didn't have him as a starter, but we'll see how Clayton – would they really use Clayton Kershaw in back-to-back games out of their bullpen?
Well, their only other left-handed reliever is Joe Bimel, who this postseason didn't, quote-unquote, cut his hand on a piece of glass and miss the postseason. So
nice.
They do have Joe Bimel this year, your classic left-on-left reliever.
That's deep Joe Bimel. That's a deep Joe Bimel cut. I like the Dodgers. I'm impressed they made the postseason, especially considering the way they started. I do think it is somewhat of a testament to Torre that he didn't lose this team and that they were actually able to blend in Manny Ramirez, but I think it's easy to blend him in when he's slugging 743. So
ridiculous.
On the Cubs, as you mentioned, they're just so much more balanced than any of the other teams in the National League. I mean, they've got a guy in Mike Fontenot who had a fantastic offensive season on their bench with really no defined role. They've got power on the bench. They've got speed on the bench. They've got some versatility. Really, it seems like the only question for them, Matt, is the health of Zambrano, and they might not even need Zambrano to win this series. What do you think if you had to pick one strength for the Cubs? Would it be
The bullpen?
Yeah,
I mean Kerry Wood, Carlos Marmol, Bob Howry had an off year, but he's still
I'd still trust him.
Heck of a reliever.
I'd still trust him.
You got Jason Marquis in the bullpen. He had a good year.
And we haven't even mentioned the Shark, Jeff Samardzija.
No, we haven't. I mean, when you just look at the names of the relievers the Cubs left off. I know Chad Gaudin struggled. I know Kevin Hart struggled. But Gaudin's got that sick sinker and Hart, that awesome slider. They didn't make it. Michael Wirtz didn't make it. Probably the best reliever a year ago.
Yeah, you're right.
And then on the offensive side, they left off PCL all-star Micah Hoffpower.
And who also played well for them.
Played well.
Last week and a half of the season. I mean, the only guy on their team with no power at all is Ryan Theriault. Everyone else they play can drive the ball.
Hmm.
I guess to a lesser extent, you could throw Reed Johnson into that kind of lack of power mix or lesser power. But this team can hurt you in so many different ways. Offensively, they're versatile. I love Lou Piniella as a postseason manager. I just think that he's got a steady hand for that kind of thing. He knows what he wants. He may be consistent almost to a fault, but I think the players kind of could use that kind of consistency out of a manager this time of year and knowing what the roles are going to be. I think he has complete control of that team. They have utter confidence in him. All those kind of intangibles that a manager brings, I think he brings those things. The only question I guess I have for them is they are really right-handed.
Right.
And the Dodgers do have all these power righties, both in the rotation and out of the bullpen. I think it will help a guy like James McDonald, Chan Ho Park. Those guys actually probably will. If the Dodgers are going to win, those guys might have to have some highly leveraged situations where they pitch well. But the flaw in that thinking is that these are all sluggers for the Cubs, and they're really not. I mean, Derek Lee and Aramis Ramirez, those guys do hit for power, but they're just good hitters. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just one-dimensional sluggers. Soriano is the only one who's really a one-dimensional slugger, and frankly, he has plenty of playoff experience, and I wouldn't worry about him. He is what he is. You can make him look awful on one pitch, and he's going to hit the ball 500 feet the next pitch. So, to me, the Cubs are the best team in the National League. I know it's been 99 years, as Josh Leventhal points out. Technically, it's been 99 years since they won a World Series. This is the 100th year.
But it's been 100 postseasons, hasn't
right,
it?
Right, this is the 100th postseason, I guess.
But
I like the Cubs' chances. I do think the Dodgers are the worst matchup for them. So I could see the Dodgers beating them. I'm picking the Cubs to win this in five games.
Yeah, Cubs in five. Sounds good.
I think it sounds good to me, and I guess the little trivia out of this is that Neil Kotz could win could be the first player ever to win a World Series with both
wow.
the Cubs and the White Sox.
Wow.
that's a crazy little amount of trivia. So I don't know how that happens. I don't know how Neil Kotz is the random player out of the universe picked for that. But I could see the Cubs winning the whole thing. It would be crazy if they won the whole thing. But
it would be. It really would be. Because that would leave, the Indians as the next team to go the longest between championships?
It would. I believe the Indians and then the Giants.
And the Giants, yeah.
Among teams that are
post-expansion teams.
You just still have, of course, like the Astros have never won a World Series.
Mariners have never been to it.
Yeah, the Mariners never. That's right. They've never won a pennant. Yeah, at least, I mean, it has the Rangers. The Rangers have they won a playoff series in their history?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. That's, I guess, I'm not even sure how to put that, but chew on that, Jamie Newberg. We'll put it that way. That would be difficult to envision. But the Rangers do have a fine farm system. So
they
got that going for them.
They do.
Let's move on to the American League playoffs, shall we? Some shuffling of paper here on the Baseball America podcast. I'm John. He's Matt. Which one do you want to start off with? The good guys? The White Sox and Rays or Red Sox Angels?
We got to start with Angels Red Sox part tres.
That's right. These two teams, they matched up last year, much to the Angels' chagrin. They matched up in 2004. So it's been good for the Red Sox. The two times they've won World Series, they've played the Angels in the postseason. But the Red Sox right now are a little bit more banged up, I think, than really any other team in the playoffs, except for maybe the Brewers, considering they don't have Sheets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Boston knows what it's going to get out of Mike Lowell or J.D. Drew. And then Josh Beckett is the huge X factor because he's been so good in his postseason career. And we saw last year when the Red Sox were down in the series against the Indians, how good he was in the division, in the championship series, the LCS, and they really didn't need him. You know, they just steamrolled the Rockies. But I think the Red Sox, at full strength, are probably a better team than the Angels, but they're not at full strength. So they're going to have to get some superlative performances, I think, out of other players other than the guys they usually rely on.
And plus, it's Jason Bay's first postseason experience. I mean, this is a guy who's been in the major leagues for 5 or 6 years.
Not a great point.
5 years.
It's a different – this will be the first test. Jason Bay has certainly performed with Boston, 293, 370, 527, 9 home runs. Struck out a little bit, but when that trade happened, people thought the critics of that trade said this will really hurt Boston in the playoffs without Manny Ramirez, where he always gives you good at-bats. Last year especially, Manny was as locked in as he probably ever has been in the postseason. He was just tremendous in the playoffs last year in terms of the quality of his at-bats. And it is different, Ortiz and Manny back-to-back, and now you don't have that. That said, I'd actually make a case that Kevin Youkilis, in my mind, could be the American League MVP over Pedroia. I don't quite get the Pedroia love in the American League MVP. He had a great year. Youkilis significantly out-hit him. I know that first base is a really offensive position. Who's the first baseman in the American League who had a better year than Youkilis? He had a better year than Morneau had. Mm-hmm. Morneau stumbled down the stretch. He only drove in 4 more runs than Youkilis.
If you count Teixeira's entire body of work, is he in the equation?
Absolutely. No, he is. He's a better player. I'd rather have Mark Teixeira. And from year to year, I'd rather have Justin Morneau. But Kevin Youkilis had a phenomenal year this year. 312, 390, 569. I think that he's not the feared hitter that Manny Ramirez is. He's easier to pitch to than Manny Ramirez is, but damn, he's still good. I think people just still undersell the guy. So I still think Boston's offense is not going to suffer from its lack of Manny Ramirez. And I do think Boston, the bigger issue for them is I think they'll suffer from not having a full-strength J.D. Drew and Mike Lowell. with those two guys, if those guys are not at their best, the back half of that lineup looks a little bit lesser.
Under that scenario, does Lowry move to third and Cora to short? Is that what happens?
That's possible. Or you could also play, as Boston has a lot of times this year, Sean Casey first and Euclid's at third. Okay. Euclid's played 30-plus games at third base this year. Pedroia's had a fantastic year, whether he's leading off or hitting second. He's a force to be reckoned with. Ortiz, Euclid's. Jacoby Ellsbury led the American League in steals and can be effective, although he had about a .319 on base percentage as a leadoff hitter this year. I still think Boston's offense is good, but if Lowell and Drew are not healthy, and Lowell's hip especially, I think, is a big issue for him, especially fielding. It didn't sound like it would hurt him as much at the plate as it would in the field, but Drew with a very bulky back. If you had to take J.D. Drew out and replace him with Crisp or with Mark Kotze, you're really taking a huge step down in power. I'm not sure the cumulative effect might really, I think, hurt Boston. I think if Boston's going to win this series, they're going to win it with starting pitching. John Lester, Daisuke Matsuzaka, and if Beckett is healthy, a healthy Josh Beckett. But to me, Boston has an advantage, in starting pitching compared to the Angels. As good as the Angels starting pitching is, I would take Boston's over Los Angeles. But the Angels, though, these are also, in my mind, Matt, two of the best managers in baseball, Francona and Socia. In fact, I'd say they're probably the two best managers in baseball for me. If I had to choose a manager for my team, these would be the first two guys I would call. But the Angels just seem like they're so well built for playoff baseball. Right-handed bats, left-handed bats, starting pitching, bullpen, speed, defense. What's their weakness in your mind, or do they not really have one?
Well, you talked about the Boston lineup being a bit three-headed, three big bats. I mean, the Angels are really two-headed in a lot of ways with Vlad Guerrero and Mark Teixeira.
Yeah, you're right.
And so getting Teixeira is just that much more crucial for them. A lot of these guys are nice complementary hitters, Howie Kendrick, Eric Ibar, Garrett Anderson.
Honestly, I didn't realize just how underwhelming some of their seasons were.
So,
Torrey Hunter had a good year, I guess.
Okay, Torrey Hunter.
We're leaving Torrey out. So, there's a 112 ops plus. But, they needed Mark Teixeira probably as much as any team needed to make that deal, and he had such an impact with them. Apparently, the food at Scott Boras' guest house agrees with Mark Teixeira. 13 home runs and 14 doubles in 54 games playing out of a Boris's guest house. I just love that. He said he was in Boris's guest house. I'm sorry. I think it's hilarious.
So that pitching depth will really be put to the test for the Angels. They're going to have to pitch well to win, I think.
No, I think you're right. And then
and they're probably up to the task because John Lackey, a proven ace.
Love John Lackey.
Joe Saunders and Irvin Santana, huge steps forward this year. And then Jared Weaver's your fourth. I mean, that tells you –
and John Garland's your five. I mean, a couple of years ago, John Garland was like an ace for the White Sox, or one of their four co-aces, however you want to put it. And he's very steady. I mean, he's a ground ball guy, and usually league average this year, quite a decent amount below average, actually. But I wouldn't hesitate to throw him out there for a playoff start. If that's your fifth starter, that's pretty good.
Did you want to wax poetic about Scott Shields? Or
I could. I do love Scott Shields. BA cover boy Scott Shields. To me, I guess the best thing about their bullpen is just the variety they offer to you. They can go with Scott Shields. Darren Oliver's a nice lefty out of the bullpen. Jose Arredondo won 10 games out of their bullpen. Had a scout just rave about Jose Arredondo the other day. Another middle relief option, Kevin Jepsen, was great in the Olympics. Talked to a scout up there who loved him, just the movement he gets on a low 90s two-seamer.
And he should note that they went with Jepsen, a double-A reliever, essentially, instead of Justin Spire. Mr. 80% sliders is a Spire.
That's right. And that just tells you the Angels. Mike Socia, to me, has such a philosophy. He doesn't deviate from it. Everyone on that team believes in it. You see Joe Maddon having brought some of that mentality to Tampa, I think, is a huge part of their success. But Mike Socia's stamp is just so all over this team in every way. And one of those ways is we're going to shorten the game and we're going to obliterate you in the bullpen with power arms. And I think it's amazing that in retrospect they won with Brendan Donnelly. And then who was the other joker who had the crazy hand pump? It's not Matt Wise. Was it Matt Wise?
No, it wasn't Matt Wise. It was
it's killing me that I can't remember this now.
Ben something or other.
Ben Weber,
there you go.
I mean, those are their middle relievers they won with. But K-Rod was their setup guy back then.
And Percival
was the closer. So, I mean – K-Rod, obviously the rookie, I mean, the record with the 62 saves and 69 games finished and 76 games. I mean, yeah, whoop-de-doo. They have so many other effective bullpen arms. You just can't be trailing this team after six innings, because after that, Mike Socio will use the bullpen and he will shut the door.
And they can get one run.
That's right.
One cushion run. At any time, you know.
And that's the thing. The scout I talked to the other day, who does big league coverage, talked to a couple guys actually trying to do some help our rookie list, and he just said this team is built to win 1- and 2-run games. They're built to win 3-2, 3-1, 4-2, 5-4. That's how they're made. That's how they're built. That's how their mentality is. When they have a 1-run lead, they play like it's a 5-run lead. They never panic. They always make the defensive play. And otherwise, Jeff Mathis would not be one of their catchers. Otherwise, like you said, they would not be able to really get to the playoffs with a bunch of guys who are league average or below in their lineup. Very aggressive, a lot of big hacks, but decent contact. And then, of course, like you said, the two real boppers in the middle of the lineup with Guerrero, to a lesser extent, Hunter, and then Mark Teixeira. But, boy, Mark Teixeira makes all the difference in the world. To me, if Boston, again, if Lowell and Drew are healthy, Boston's a better team. I'd pick Boston to win the series. Otherwise, but as it is, I don't think they're full strength. I'm picking the Angels to win this series, a thrilling series in five games.
Angels in four. Every time you say five, it never goes five. I'll say four.
You're right about that, but I'm saying it anyway. And we'll wrap up the podcast with the good guys, the White Sox. If you can't tell, we're Hawk fans. Not really, but my dad loves the Hawk.
He is entertaining.
He is entertaining. But you get the Hawk and the White Sox versus the Rays. I guess, first off, we should note just what a great story it is for the Rays to make the postseason. Let's just get that out of the way. It's amazing that that Tampa not only is in the playoffs, but won 97 games this year. That's just...
Where do you start?
I guess you start with the starting pitching. And then you start with James Shields getting the game one start for them, which is impressive. I do think we already mentioned Joe Maddon. I think Joe Maddon deserves a lot of the credit here. I mean, I know Andrew Friedman made some nice tweaks to their roster, and the organization has developed a lot of these players. But to me, the trade they made with the Twins and trading away both Elijah Dukes and Delmon Young helped their karma.
And the overlooked Dan Wheeler trade from last trading deadline.
That was huge because Ty Wigginton's actually a good player and had a nice year for Houston this year. But Dan Wheeler was crucial.
He's an eighth-inning guy.
He's our eighth-inning guy. What, he had 13 saves when Percival went down. It was seamless. But, like, picking up Grant Balfour. So I think there's I think sometimes people think of the Rays as kind of like the American League version of the Brewers, as far as a team that was just built 100% through scouting and player development, had a lot of high draft picks, and hit on them all, and they all worked out. That's really not what they are. They'll have a couple first-round picks on their playoff roster because David Price is going to be on the roster, it looks like. They haven't officially released their roster, but it looks like Price will be on it in their bullpen. And obviously B.J. Upton. But let's go around the horn with the Rays. Carlos Pena is a reclamation project. Aki Uemura is basically a free agent from Japan. Jason Bartlett, part of that shrewd trade with the Twins, which I think actually helped both teams. Third base, Evan Longoria, a first-round pick, who clearly is a pick to click.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Carl Crawford was a second-round pick, but a high draft pick, and he's coming back. I think that even though he had a below-average year, he'll help them. B.J. Upton, one of their high draft picks. But then in right field, it's not one of their high draft picks. Again, I guess they could go with Rocco Baldelli there.
Gabe Gross.
But Gabe Gross with a trade. Baldelli, really, I wouldn't say that his career has worked out as anyone expected. Donnie Navarro behind the plate, trade. A guy they were trying to give away last year, trying to do anything to replace. He had a great year for them. And their pitching staff, James Shields was not a high draft pick. I see no sign of DeJuan Bradleton here. You know, it's Kazmir, one of the best trades ever. Shields, homegrown, but not a high draft pick. Garza, trade. Sonnenstein, a low draft pick. And in the bullpen, like you said, it's a free agent. Percival, trade. Wheeler.
A shrewd trade for J.P. Howell.
Great trade for J.P. Howell, you're right. Although Wheeler was an original Ray. J.C. draft, but then he wandered through his career with the Mets and the Astros, a couple other teams, I believe, and then he came back to Tampa. But Grant Balfour, scrap heap, unwanted by the Twins and the Reds, I believe.
Brewers,
thank you.
He was traded for Seth McClung, who we talked about earlier. So
I forgot.
Small world.
Mr. Transaction over here. That is awesome. What a great trade for Tampa. Holy cow. Holy cow. But Tampa, to me, they're here. And I know that a lot of people thought they were going to make a quantum leap this year. I think I thought they could win 75, 80 games. And I know that I guess Baseball Prospectus picked them to win 85 games. No one picked them to win 97 games. And if you did, You thought they were going to win that because B.J. Upton was going to have a big year, or Carl Crawford would have a big year, or that their pitchers.
Or Kazmir would have had a big
year.
He didn't have a big year.
But he didn't. The guys who did it are Sonnenstein and, you know, Edwin Jackson until September. A lot of other guys, and then they just, I think their defense is being so good. So they're quite the contrast. They're kind of like the Twins in that they're a pitching and defense kind of team, only they just pitch better than the Twins, and they defend as well or better than the Twins. And I think especially in the infield, they defend better.
That's a fair comp. You know, and we can't neglect to mention, well, I can't anyway, Cliff Floyd.
Oh, yeah,
the DH,
absolutely.
You know.
Great veteran presence.
He's one of my favorite players.
All-time
cheese
fave. He is a personal cheese ball. There's no doubt about that. Not a whole lot of personal cheese balls for me on the White Sox.
And, well, Cliff Floyd is playing, is from the Chicago area. And
that's right.
And that segues us right to the good guys.
That's a perfect segue. He is from the Chicagoland area. And I guess my big question for the White Sox, Matt, is do they have anything left? Burley, Danks, Floyd, and Vasquez have all gone on 3 days rest. I can't imagine they're going to give Clayton Richard a start. They do get this extra day off, I guess, right here. But do they have enough pitching left, starting pitching left, or do you think they're going to be on fumes in the postseason? They do have some players with experience from that World Series team a couple years back, specifically Burley, Jermaine Dye, Paulie, AJ. I can't stop once I start.
JD.
That's right. And I guess the other question for them, too, is do they get Carlos Quentin back?
That's true.
We'll see if they put him on the roster from his broken wrist.
He is the ultimate X factor.
He's a pretty big X factor. They clearly have enough offense without him, but boy, Carlos Quentin versus Dwayne Wise, that's a no contest. That's a no-low contender there.
you talk about the short rest of the rotation, but who do you give the ball to out of the bullpen? Their only reliable guys down the stretch have been Jenks and Thornton. You know,
I love Matt Thornton. He's pretty good. Limebring pitched a scoreless inning the other day, but he and Dotel certainly have fallen short in the second half. As the Hawks said, our bullpen hasn't been as good down the stretch. We used to be able to shorten games to 7 innings, but we can't do that anymore. I can't stop. But I think these two teams are contrasting teams. I mean, the White Sox lack of athleticism is pretty startling when you have Junior out there in center field. Obviously, he made the accurate, if not very strong, throw to throw out Kadire the other night in the playoff game. But they take a quantum leap in athleticism when they have Anderson and or Wise out there. They don't seem to like Orlando Cabrera, but they are very athletic with Cabrera and Alexi Ramirez. But their corner infield defense isn't that great. And they miss Joe Creedy. They're certainly not at full strength. They really kind of staggered to the finish until winning those last three games. So for me, I think this is a clear – the Rays have the clear advantage here, even though they really don't have any playoff experience.
And they're so good at home, too. You
great point. That,
them having the best record in the AL is huge, more so for them than any other team, in my opinion.
I agree. No, out of these
playoff
teams.
Because teams just aren't used to playing on turf. Even it's not AstroTurf like we knew it in the 80s.
You're right.
But it's still a different environment.
Well, just look at what the White Sox just did last week in Minnesota in a similar environment. They got swept.
Yeah.
And the home field advantage, I think, meant everything. Last night for the White Sox with their blackout and yada yada and all that mess. But I do think the Rays are the better team, and they've proven to be the better team overall. It's really going to come down to, for the White Sox, can their power bats prevail? 235 home runs is amazing for the White Sox. That's just and this year they clearly outdistance everybody else in the American League in home runs. I think they're going to be out of gas. I don't think that John Danks, Gavin Floyd, and Javier Vasquez are going to be enough. I think Burley could win them a game. I don't see it going past four games. I'm picking Tampa in this series.
Yeah, Tampa in three. And we probably should give credit to two of the more shrewd trades. We talked about the Rays trades. How about getting reclamation projects like Gavin Floyd and an up-and-coming left-hander who the Rangers appeared not to want so much in John Danks?
I can't disagree with you. I'm not a big Kenny Williams guy, but Jim Callis points out many times in SBA that Kenny Williams has made some great trades. And boy, I think I did on a podcast, I mocked the Gavin Floyd acquisition.
Right.
And Gavin Floyd has been phenomenal for that team. 17 wins this year, 200-plus innings. He was very good the last game of the regular season for them. He's durable. He has turned into what the number 4 overall pick in a draft should be. And boy, the Phillies certainly wish he was doing it in their rotation, but it just didn't work out for them for him in Philadelphia. And you mentioned the Rangers. How would the Rangers' rotation look if they had Edison Volquez? I know they got return on him with Josh Hamilton, but Edison Volquez, Chris Young, John Danks, all guys they gave up.
Aaron Harang from many moons ago.
Wow,
but
yeah.
It's not fair to count him, but.
I hadn't even thought about all Aaron Harang, who was not very good this year, but we'll blame that on Johnny B. Baker. But, yeah, I think the Rangers can develop some pitching. They just can't. They know how to take the reservation. They just don't know how to hold it.
Javier Vasquez, at the time, we mocked them for trading Chris Young. But, I mean, it's fair to argue which side has gotten the better of that trade.
It is. It is fair to argue. And Javier Vasquez is a fourth starter, but he's a pretty good fourth starter. He's, I mean, 200 strikeouts this year. It's hard to argue with that. So he's not a big game pitcher as Ozzie Guillen. I can't do my Ozzie Guillen impersonation for public consumption, Juno. But he certainly doesn't seem to like Javi Vasquez in big games, but I think he's going to have to pick him. So we're picking – we picked all the same, I think.
We did. That was not the goal.
That we didn't state our picks coming in, but we both picked the Phillies. So we both picked Philadelphia versus Chicago in the National League. Who do you like in that championship series?
I got to go with the Cubs.
You know, I'm going to go with Philadelphia in that. I just have a little feeling about the Phillies. Feeling with a PH for the Phillies. I love their bullpen. I mean, that's the big key for me is I love their bullpen. Just something's going to go wrong for the Cubs.
It's a great thing when a bullpen comes together. I mean, it can really push you far in the playoffs, you know?
Absolutely.
It's one of the factors that most good playoff teams have in common.
And the other thing is they can beat you with speed, the Shane Victorinos and Jimmy Rollins of the
no
world.
Doubt.
And they're not just reliant on the power, but, boy, I would hate to have to face Chase Utley or Ryan Howard or Ryan Howard or Ryan Howard, as Art from Philadelphia calls us every week right now. I would not have to face those guys with my season on the line. Those guys are just too good. Right now, Ryan Howard's just too good. American League, Angels, Rays. You can't see the Rays getting the World Series this year, can you? I don't think the pupil beats the master. I don't think Joe Maddon, funky glasses and all, beats Mike Socha this year.
You're probably right. But I'm bound to pick the opposite team because
that's good. That's a good idea.
I take the Rays.
I'm picking an Angels Phillies World Series.
Cubs Rays.
And you're picking Cubs Rays. I think the Angels taking the whole thing home this year. And as much as everyone's talking, including us, about CeCe Sabathia and his contract drive and what he's done to help himself. Mark Teixeira is going to make himself an awful lot of money.
Exactly.
He's already done it with the way he performed with the Angels, and he's going to do it in the postseason, and that guy is going to get paid this offseason. He's a switch-hitting, gold glove, power first baseman. He's basically the mold.
Who hits
for average.
For average, makes contact.
And it's a good guy. He's going to break the bank. He is really like the perfect, other than being A-Rod and being a left side of the infield
right.
player, he's the next best thing to that for a free agent. I think he'll get $200 million this offseason from some team, and it might just be the Angels. So I think he helps lead the Angels to the promised land and then becomes the first Boris client to actually re-sign with that team after being traded in many years. He'll be a better Boris client contract than, say, Andrew Jones. I'll throw that out there. I'll throw that out in the mix. Matt, before we go, and it's been a long podcast, do you want to talk at all about our top 20 rookies or no?
That's a whole separate podcast.
That's a whole separate podcast, another show. We'll just say there were several of our top 20 rookies on the field in game 163, at least three. And I think it was a solid rookie class, but not a great rookie class
right.
in Major League Baseball this year.
And we're seeing that universally at all levels of baseball. It's not – the minor leagues are just not as deep right now.
I'd say so. This was a little bit of a down year. Could come back next year. But the 2005
right.
draft was so good. That's what fueled 06, 07 – now, a lot of those guys are in the big leagues, and 08, a little dip, I think a little natural talent dip. But that wave of talent that came through in the 2005 draft, is, and to a lesser extent, the 06, the top half of the 06 draft, especially the pitching-wise with the Tim Lincecum, Jabba Chamberlain, some of those arms, and then Evan Longoria, all those guys already graduated out of the minor leagues. So, and some of those guys not even rookies anymore, like Lincecum, basically going to be Cy Young in his second year and third full season in pro ball, going to win the National League Cy Young Award. So great stuff. Enjoyed talking it. Losing my voice already about the postseason, and we'll watch it all over the next couple of weeks. So thanks for the download. For Matt Eddy, I'm John Manuel. We'll talk to you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.